In a nutshell.
Good morning, Honorable James. Thank you to the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, all.
Sorry, Dom. I should have allowed members to introduce themselves first so that the interviewee must know who we are. Sorry for that, Dom.
No,
yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Dr. Fisher. My name is Maina Lesoma, member of this committee. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Dr. Fisher. I'm Miriam Kibi, a member of this subcommittee.
Good morning, Doc. I'm Zwakhe Sibisi, member of the subcommittee.
Good morning, Dr. Fisher. My name is Rosina Komani, the member of this subcommittee.
Come in, Honorable Clark.
Good morning, my name is Michelle
Clark
and I'm a member of the subcommittee. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Fisher, could you please confirm what is contained in your CV, as I've said, just in a nutshell?
Yes, thank you, Honorable James. Thank you to the committee for the introduction, and really thank you so much for the invitation to be interviewed. Honorable Chair, what I can say at this point is that what you see there is absolutely correct. I have 30 years service in the public service. I have a PhD in public affairs. I have a master's degree in public administration. I'm currently serving as the South African ambassador in Indonesia. Served for 5 years or 4 years and 9 months as the South African ambassador in Chile. Yes, I think that. Let me leave it at that. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
No problem.
I'm trying to be rude.
No problem.
Trying to manage time. I'm trying to manage time properly, as I've indicated earlier. You just have to tell us in brief,
okay,
because we have the copy of your CV.
Okay.
Yes.
Honourable
Minister.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sorry, I haven't asked my question. I was just introducing the applicant.
That's
sorry.
Why I'm mumbling.
Yeah. Sorry, man. We started on a wrong footing this morning. Let's go back to this. The Public Service Commission has a constitutional mandate to promote the values and principles of Section 195 of the Constitution. Can you briefly tell us what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission and the values and principles governing public administration?
Thank you, Jane. The public service commission and a commissioner is really needs to uphold high ethical standards. I think that's part of what the constitution says. It's about personnel practices. It's about identifying efficient performance. Also investigating grievances and to report to relevant authorities. Now, of course, the principles of public administration are quite vast. I mean, we can talk about those, but I think the ideal is about promoting ethical public service for a developmental state. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Honorable Chair, thank you very much. And once more, Dr. Clark, Fisher, thank you for availing yourself.
We assume that you have
taking time to read the chapter 10 as it were, with that understanding, the Public Service Commission functions aimed at, among others, to promote the values and principles governing public service, public administration, and to give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures comply with the principles. I will ask three questions. I would like you to take notes so that it depends on your listening skills. Two, in your own view, Doc, is the Public Service Commission making an impact in the public service, and how can the Public Service Commission reposition itself to make an impact, given its wider mandate of promoting the values and principles governing the public service administration? The last question for me for now will be, considering constitutionally, do you think spouse and children for the political representatives and former members should be prevented from doing business with the state? Provide merit for your answer and provide solutions. So it's a problem statement and also mitigating factors, as it were. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable thank you very much. Well, the first question is the Public Service Commission making an impact? I think it is. I think it can make more of an impact. I think that as a watchdog, and we've seen what is happening in the public service. The public service for me is probably the most important employer in South Africa. And I think if we look at it now, there's many recommendations that the Public Service Commission has made over the years have now been incorporated into the public service, amongst others additional training, amongst others introduction into the public service around ethical issues. So I think the public service, to answer you directly on that one, yes, is making an impact. In terms of the wider values, I think the developmental state is a big question. I mean, how does the public service promote the developmental state? And I think even in that regard, the Public Service Commission is making an impact. With regard to spouses and children of serving politicians or members, ma'am, I believe that in South Africa everybody should be given an opportunity to do business in an ethical way. Now, spouses doing business with the state, yes, I think it shouldn't happen. But we let me put it this way. Everybody must have an opportunity to do business with the state. And if it is allowed, remember my first point was at this point no, but if it were to have been allowed, then I think the declarations must happen up front. The declarations of interest, the declarations of there must be transparency. And I think that to a large extent that is not happening now. Okay, thank you very much. I will leave that at the Chair.
Honourable Kim.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My question would be, the Constitution directs the public service to be professional, accountable and developmental orientated, and the NDP further amplifies this constitutional directive by identifying specific steps that need to promote the values and principles across public administration. Now my question is, what is your understanding on the vision of professionalizing the public administration in the country? In your response, could you please distinguish between cadre deployment based on the meritocratic and mediocratic into the public administration? My second one is, what could be the role of the Public Service Commission in ensuring professionalization of the public administration is institutionalized? I'm not sure whether you... I'm also going to ask you my second question. My first question, my first one is true, and now I'm getting to my second one. Maladministration and corruption are cancers to ingrained in the public service, has become the new normal, and is impacting negatively on the development in this country. Now my question is to you, what causes corruption and how can the Public Service Commission play a meaningful role in preventing, reducing and curbing corrupt practices in the public service? Please indicate current weaknesses in the system and propose your solutions in your response. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable TV.
What is my understanding of professionalism? Ma'am, I want to say this. We can talk about qualifications. I think that's important. But I want to start with the small things. The small things, it's about upholding ethical standards, it's about service delivery, it's about, you know, where I would want to say the small things matter. I shouldn't be taking a pen like this home. And when my son is at home asking me, Dad, can I have a pen? And then give this to him because I got it from the office. I should go and buy him one and give him one. So for me, when I say the small things matter, these are the important things. Of course, there are policy considerations. Of course, there are a whole host of things that we need to comply with. Time. Coming to work on time. Doing what you need to do. Taking shorter... Well, not even taking smoke breaks. I mean, I'm not a smoker, but when you do these things, you detract from your service delivery. And for me, these small things, or what one can put in inverted commas, are important. Now, you've also asked me about cadre deployment and meritocracy. Now, I'm when one looks at the South African situation, there is room for cadre deployment. The cadre deployment, however, needs to happen, in my view, with some training, with some orientation, if I can put it that way, because many people are highly qualified, and so it needs a reorientation of those people to fit into the role where they should be or where they are being placed. But I think, ma'am, that there's a role, as I said, for cadre deployment. But I think there's also this level of professionalism that need to be adhered to. There needs to be an infusion of professionalism with cadre deployment, or diffusion, I should say. Now, ma'am, you also asked me about maladministration and corruption. I think maladministration is as bad as corruption. And maladministration very often is the hiding, you know, is done in to hide the actual corruption. It is endemic, and I agree with you. And I think that we have all these beautiful policies. I mean, there's the PFMA, there's all of these lovely things. I can quote all of these things that I've been doing all over the years. But for some reason, this maladministration and corruption still happens. Ma'am, I see it in my own area. When I take over an office and I walk into this office and I see, but there are the policies, but they've never been implemented, or they haven't been implemented. And you then have to rectify. I have had to rectify many things over the years. Now, you asked me one of the... I was thinking about this question. I actually made a note on my phone, on my notes. One of the things that I would recommend needs to be done is that the pensions of civil servants who are found to be corrupt must be taken away. If again, of course, after a process when they are found to be corrupt, I feel, because there are many countries that do that, even in maladministration, there are many countries that actually have this policy where, you know, pensions of civil servants who are found to be corrupt or deemed to be corrupt, not only deemed but found, are actually taken away. Now, in terms of introduction and orientation, I think that's important. In terms of ethics, that's important. In, you know, when one brings new people into the civil service, I think these are important. Working with universities, I think, you know, to get universities to model their courses in such a way that when somebody comes into the public service, there's already, they can hit the ground running. And maybe even internships. I think these are all the possibilities that can be followed. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Hinton, I've got a few questions. The first one would be, professionalization of the public service can happen as a function of the meritocracy, which is a system of appointing or promoting staff based on the knowledge and skills. Now the question would be, as a commissioner of the PSC, how would you advise government departments to institutionalize meritocratic ethos in the administration of the state in order to achieve professional public service? And my last question to you would be, how do you think the Public Service Commission can, one, strengthen its own oversight, two, and oversight by Parliament? I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
The professionalism of the public service, I think, it cannot be stressed, or it cannot be overstressed. I think it's long overdue. And yes, it has been happening, and I think that we talk about service delivery, we talk about all of these things, but we still see so many gaps in our public administration. Sir, I want to hearken back to what we had some years ago when we had Minister Fraser Moleketi as Minister of Public Service and Administration. Now, two of the things that they were pursuing in those days was an e-government process, and the other was a single public service. And part of the idea of the single public service was again also to have civil servants from the various but from national to provincial to diffuse skills across the public service. And I think that is one of the things that we need to do. As I said, being an academic as well, I would like to think that academia should play an important role in this, and I think the Public Service Commission must play a role in identifying courses. The School of Government that has been established, I think that is also an important area. The last question you asked was strengthening the oversight. I would want to say the Public Service Commission has that role, sir, or should play that role in terms of they must be given the teeth to do so. And the Constitution does provide certain rules in terms of which the Public Service Commission should act. Now, I often think that investigating and reporting, yes, that's the start of it. But as I've suggested earlier on, there needs to be additional. I mentioned something like, taking civil servants' pensions. Because I think if we have the harsher penalty, it needs to be those kinds of things need to be implemented. So I in terms of the Public Service Commission, we need to start with individuals. That level of professionalism that you talk about, when we bring people in, it's. And we can debate what professionalism is. It's not just about sitting behind the desk and doing work. It's about remembering that whatever you are doing here has an impact on somebody out there. These are the kinds of things that I think people must realize when they're sitting in their offices. Oversight, I think, has to happen in Parliament. I think there needs to be stronger. There needs to be a legal component as well. Okay, thank you, sir.
Honorable Clerk, Dr. Fisha, Honorable Clerk is on the virtual platform, so she's going to ask from the virtual platform. Honorable Clerk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Dr. Fisher.
Good morning.
My first question to you is, it is believed that a responsible, ethical and value-driven public service depends on, among other things, the investigative function of the PM, on public administration, malpractice, particularly in the areas of irregular appointments, and curbing of corruption in government departments. How can the PSC strengthen its role of investigation of unethical conduct and play a meaningful role in assisting government to curb corruption in the public administration? And then the next question, sir. The power to appoint in some advocates defined by Section 37 of the Public Service Act, Minister of the MEC can delegate the power to officials within the department. First question, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and a capable state? And two, what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Clark. Well, again, your questions revolve around irregular appointments and strengthening the role of the PSC to curb corruption. There are many policies in place that deal with corruption, and I think these need to be implemented. I think we need to have qualified people who are looking and implementing. I think furthermore that these qualified people need to be supporting the work of the PSC. You know, corruption is so endemic, it's quite sad that these things are happening. I think there needs to be very strong implementation and pursuit of people who are corrupt. People must be suspended, people must be... the processes need to be followed, and if they must be dismissed, then they should be... and again, any proceeds of crime should be recouped. All right. Now, if we send out a strong message by following these policies that already exist, then I think you will go a long way to curb corruption. You may not eradicate it, but at least curbing it. Part of when one recruits also, there needs to be this orientation, like I said, and it's happening, and ethics needs to be part of the training. Now in terms of the power to appoint, you ask what are the major obstacles. In South Africa, I think we have a unique approach where we have had to re-engineer the civil service so that it is all-inclusive. And I think there's a role for that. There is a role for that, and I think this is important. As I said earlier, there is a role for cadre deployment. What is important is that if you are taking a salary, you need to add value. You ask about the obstacles in. I think so. One of the unfortunate things is that people have been lying on their CVs. The people have been lying about qualifications, and I mean we see these things. It gives the public service a bad name. I think there needs to be. Harsher penalties for people who are found to have lied on their CVs and who have been appointed and who have taken salaries based on fraudulent qualifications or fraudulent experience that they've highlighted. I think these are there needs to be a higher level of vigilance. So in terms of some of these obstacles, I would imagine that for any recruiter, Those would be probably your more serious obstacles. And then you asked about what is this now? I can't read my own handwriting. The PSC. What was the last one now? It was probably also about the recruiting. Oh, okay. I'll just leave it at that because I have spoken about recruiting. Thank you, Honourable Clark.
Thank you very much, Chair and Dr. Fisher. Having listened to your responses, particularly on your question, on your answer, when you answered to say public servants should be allowed to do business, I'm putting this to you. There is a huge loss of public money due to corruption, especially with the public servants doing business with the state. So my question would then be, in your own opinion, how could public servants be stopped from doing business with the state, since there is legislation already preventing this practice, yet it is still going on? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kamani, thank you so much. Just a correction. I don't think I said, or I didn't say that public servants must be allowed to do business with the state. I think the initial question was, should family of members be, or of, should family members of high-ranking officials be allowed to do business? And I said no, but I said if it were to be allowed, then there must be clear rules as to how these how the business will be conducted in terms of, as I said, in terms of highlighting the conflict of interest, if you will. Now, I don't think civil servants should be doing business with the state. Civil servants themselves, no, they should not be doing business with the state. They are contracted to the state to do a job, and I don't think they must be doing business. So I actually think that you cannot do business in this case with your employer. I mean, in this case, it is the state. I think the state, these two must be kept completely separately, because certainly a conflict of interest will arise, and if you want to do business with the state, then I think you should not be employed with the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fisher. Is there anything you want to ask from this interview panel?
Mr. Chair, now there's nothing I'd like to ask. I would again just want to reiterate. I was actually scheduled to be interviewed tomorrow, but it was very coincidental that I'm here. I actually came on holiday. After the lockdown ended, and I was in Cape Town on holiday, coincidentally, hence I was able to attend the interview today, and I want to thank everybody who made those arrangements. I'm leaving tomorrow again to go and take up my post after my vacation, so thank you very much for that. Chair, I want to say thank the committee for shortlisting and inviting me, and just to say that I think in an interview situation, often I've read these things and I've studied them and I've lectured on them, but sometimes in an interview situation, when he's kind of I don't want to say nervous, because people would say that as a senior person one shouldn't be nervous, but you're still a human being,
and you have emotions.
Yes, indeed. And I want to say that I've taught these things at university. I've implemented them in my work for 30 years. I've always upheld the highest work ethic and the highest standards. Representing myself and my job, and I want to again say thank you so much for this opportunity. There are many challenges in the public service, I think I just trust that the person who gets the job will work very hard to achieve some of these challenges, or to mitigate some of these challenges. Thank you, sir. Thank you to the committee.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fisher. You are now free to leave.
Thank you very much.
You should not have been nervous. I know the interview situation is always invoking emotions.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you very much, Walter. Thank you very much.
Thank you.